Angelica, welcome to Dare to Dream. Welcome back. It's great to have you.
Hi, thank you so much.
I'm very much looking forward to our conversation on our inner authority. When someone has positive inner authority, what does that look like, or what does that feel like to be them with positive inner authority?
Well, I think that positive inner authority is someone or a way of being where you are not encumbered by feelings like shame or guilt. I think that most people who step into leadership roles, if they are lucky and they are able to continue to learn and grow from the position of having to lead others, you develop a strong self-compassion, a healthy version of self-compassion, and you don't use what I would call inner governors like shame and guilt, which are often very compensatory ways of controlling our behavior.
That's interesting, controlling our behavior. So guilt and shame, what are they? I guess what I want to ask is, what is their job? Why are they created, and how do we utilize them?
Well, I mean, that's a very big question, and I probably at some level varies for everybody how it got created, so to speak. But really, shame is something that tells us we're bad at the being level. And guilt is something that says that our behavior is bad. And I do a lot of work with epigenetic trauma, transgenerational trauma, and also sometimes things are carried over from what we might consider other lifetimes or a combination of both. So these can be inherited traumas, really, that come through from having a mother or a father or a grandparent or a great-grandparent who had shame and guilt in their consciousness, and so it's already there before we come in. Mm-hmm. I think most of us have experiences of shame and guilt at some level. I don't think I've met very many people who don't, so it's a pretty familiar energy, and I think it really... it makes people suffer quite a bit because we don't have access to true empowerment when we are governing and editing and critiquing our process all the time by feeling ashamed or feeling guilty for our behavior. The good side of shame and guilt at one level is that they are a check on our behavior. You know, they say that some people who might have what we would consider a mental disorder, like being a sociopath or somebody who doesn't experience shame or guilt, they don't have a conscience. So they really do serve, as everything does, to moderate our behavior and moderate our use of power. Even though some of us can feel very powerless, we often have power over others, whether it's people who work for us or our children or our animals. All of us as human beings have power at some level.
I always like how you say, at some level, everything serves. So that's interesting to hear that said about guilt and shame. And I want to ask, because we already have callers on the line, when somebody calls in and connects with you, what would you like from them in order to start the conversation?
Sure. So obviously we don't have a tremendous amount of time, so it's a bit truncated because I can't do a whole process with somebody, but I can certainly give them some morsels and some direction. And so if they can be concise in something they're dealing with that is related to the topic or a question even, it doesn't have to be a process oriented. Maybe they just have a question about this particular topic.
Great. So again, the topic is your inner authority, and that can involve empowerment, guilt, shame, feelings. And I'm going to bring the first caller on the line. And I believe it's Eileen. And Eileen, welcome to Dare to Dream Radio.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Hi, Eileen.
Hi. I've had a couple of, well, more than a couple of inner authority issues during the course of my life. But the two that seem to be plaguing me the most are career ups and downs. And the other one, since you also do medical intuition, correct?
Yeah.
The other one is a water retention problem that, despite working with a holistic practitioner, does not seem to subside no matter what she tries. And that's why I'm of the belief that it's not a physical issue. There is something else behind it.
Yeah, so I can give you a little information.
Okay.
It feels to me like you have some resentment that's causing the water retention. And I would say that in terms of inner authority, it feels a little bit like you have authority issues. Does that mean anything to you, authority issues?
In a general sense, yes. Are you talking about personal career? I mean, can you be more specific?
Well, I would say probably it shows up in your career. I mean, you didn't tell me so much. You said that you had ups and downs in your career, and then you asked me a very specific question. So if you have a more specific scenario you wanted to bring up, I could help you with that. But just at a basic level, you know, I'm wondering if you – did you feel that you had problems with bosses?
With clients.
With yes, clients.
That like to kind of run over me, let's say.
Uh-huh. And how did that – and what was the response that you had, a reaction?
Well, I used to just kind of put up with it more often than not, and now I'm starting to do that less.
Okay,
I mean,
so you're making progress.
Sure, I want to work with them, and so, of course, there's always compromise, but I'm letting them do less of the kind of things that actually made me feel like I was being pushed down or that I had no say in things.
Right, so even though it's a client, we could say you gave them or you have to give them some authority.
Correct.
So part of authority issues has to do with not ever losing your own authority, even though you have clients.
Okay.
So it sounds to me like, and do you resonate with the feeling of resentment?
To a certain degree, yes.
Mm-hmm. What feelings did you become frustrated? Did you become? What feelings are you aware of that came up with the client?
Yes, feelings frustrated, trapped, taken advantage of,
mm-hmm.
Those kinds of feelings.
So part of inner authority in general is a feeling of knowing that you have a clear sense of what's okay for you and what isn't okay. And I think when you have clients, it's always a struggle to feel that you don't want to lose the client, and at the same time you have the awareness that you have to keep a certain boundary in order to know that you have the integrity of your business and your core values intact. And
exactly.
When we don't have a strong sense of inner authority, or we feel scared that somehow we won't be supported or the client will leave, we give it away and we allow ourselves to be walked on or taken advantage of or negotiate away things that really don't work for us.
Exactly.
Right? So I would say the water retention has to do with resentment. So the deeper issue for you is, what are you afraid of in holding your boundaries?
What am I afraid of? Well, several things. And one is, like you're saying, losing some of those clients.
Right, which may happen, actually, right?
Well, let's just say the universe is kind of taking care of that for me. If I'm deciding that I should still hang on to this client, something happens and the relationship gets severed. Just happened.
Right.
Yes. It just happened yesterday or Monday.
Right.
With a new client. Yep. So.
Right. So my suggestion to you would be to get very clear. You could even write it down exactly what your core values are, because it sounds like you're already moving in the right direction. And be very clear about what you can and cannot work with. And, of course, it's going to take a tremendous amount of courage on your part to risk that the universe is going to meet you at the point of your action and your intention to really move vertically into more inner authority, which has to do with source backing you up, not your clients. And that you can take your business, your character, your integrity to a new level by standing for what you know is right. These are not emotional decisions, but when we feel guilty or fearful or shameful, those energies will make us act in a way that is not in alignment with our higher self, you could say. And, of course, it's always a risk.
Yes.
resonate with you?
Yes, it does.
So I would say that, you know, I know we don't have a ton of time right now, but I would really look at the parts of you that feel vulnerable and scared and feel that the risk-taking feels too much for, and support that part of you so that you're not hanging yourself out to dry in a young place, and that you really have the adult you and the one that does trust the universe and can be in relationship with something more universal and deep that allows you to progress at all levels.
Okay.
Eileen, thank you so much for calling in with the question.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
I hope you got a lot out of that.
I did, and that's the thing. I've been getting some of those insights myself, and as I start taking small steps toward it, I'm feeling better about things, although it's taking some time for the actual effect to arrive, let's say, the reality
right.
to change.
And I'm just going to reiterate some of what Angelica said, because I think this is a huge, huge one that you brought up for anyone who's an entrepreneur. And I can certainly relate. I have one client. Most of my clients are phenomenal, but I have one client who just doesn't return calls or texts or anything, and I need things from him in order to create. And it's very frustrating. One client out of everybody I've ever worked with. But this is very important. What I heard was to support the young part of each of us in the vulnerability, being scared, and the risk-taking, and then to take action by writing down core values, what you can and cannot work with, and to have the courage to understand we may lose this client, and it's okay, because when we step into the knowingness, the universe is going to meet us and Source will back us up. That is the everything. Welcome back to Dare to Dream. This is Debbie Dashinger, and I have got Angelica Singh on the show. And before we get started with another caller, Angelica didn't feel quite done with Eileen. So, Eileen, whether you hear this live or in replay, I'm going to turn this over to Angelica to just finish, because she got another piece for you. So go ahead, Angelica.
Thanks. So, Eileen, if you're still listening, I just wanted to let you know that I feel that if you remember what happened when you were 14, there was something that happened with your father that would have created or set up some of the challenges that you were bringing up around authority. So I just wanted to give you that place of intuition so that you might be able to start working from there.
Mm, beautiful. So we've got Darna on the line. Darna, thank you for your patience, and welcome to Dare to Dream.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. What is your question, Darna?
Okay, so I feel stuck, and I've always felt kind of stuck.
Darna, are you on a speakerphone? And if so, would you please put yourself on regular?
I'm not on a speakerphone.
Okay, then speak a little more directly, and you're coming in and out.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
So I've always felt stuck. That's the first part. And just needing direction.
Okay. Can you give me a little more information about what you feel stuck about?
Well, I have chronic fatigue syndrome, so I've always had a hard time focusing because my energy levels fluctuate so much. That's part of it, but I'd like to get to the root of what's going on with all of it.
Okay, Darna, are you comfortable discussing some of your history on the radio this way? Because if I say something, it might be impactful to you. Are you okay with that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Do you have a history of sexual abuse?
No.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Did you have any kind of abuse in your life?
Well, there was a lot of emotional abuse. And, threats. Like,
what was happening to you when you were 13?
13.
Were you in a relationship with a boy by chance?
Not at 13. I think that would be like grade 7.
Mm-hmm. Did you have a friend that was a boy?
No, nothing like that. I remember being quite depressed around that time.
Uh-huh. Any specific incident that you remember? Anything stand out to you?
Not really.
Okay, well, what
I kind of think about school and that kind of stuff, but like there wasn't anything specific about it.
Mm-hmm. So what I would say is that it feels like, do you have a challenge remembering things in general?
Not really. I've been involved in working on my stuff for about 30 years, so.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it feels to me like there's a level of resistance and a little bit of block that's going on, but what I would do if I were you is I would think about that particular time frame.
I'm feeling some depression, anger stuff, but nothing specific is coming up around that. Mm-hmm. Maybe second chakra.
I feel
more than remember incidents, yeah.
Uh-huh. So I would say that there was something that occurred for you that felt like a violation at that time.
Okay.
And perhaps that's why you're feeling it at the second. But when I'm sitting with you, I feel quite a bit of resistance as well, which is totally fine. And, you know, obviously you're calling in and it, and there's a certain amount of not being able to, there's an anonymity to it. So I would just want to offer you a sense of safety too, because there's a reason that these defenses come up. And it sounds like I would say that something happened to you at that age.
Yeah, well, I'll tell. Like my heart is open, and I'm open. So it's more the resistance then would be at those lower chakras, and I can check that out. But I, you know, as I'm sitting here, I'm not really picking up on anything from that. I just remember school generally and feel the feelings of depression. I mean, that's a good start right there.
Yeah, and just remember the unconscious is very powerful. It's easy to block things out and not want to remember certain things. So
I want to remember. But basically the thing is, like a lot of my issue, because I have an illness, I think a lot of it is just impacted. And so I will have feelings about stuff, but not necessarily the memories.
Uh-huh. Well, what I would do, this would be my suggestion, is, and I've done this myself, is I would just go through, you know, if what I'm saying resonates with you at all, when you get off the phone or at some point, you can write down the things that you do remember, and I would write down specifics, because the specifics always lead us into the depth. So if you can spend some time just remembering and recalling specifics from that time, not just feelings and sensations.
Well, the feelings will lead me to the information, though. It should. That's been my experience. So I can work with that.
Okay.
Let it work.
Great. Thanks for your call.
All right.
Thanks,
thank you.
Yarna.
All right.
So
bye-bye.
Just to reiterate that, bye. That was a great line. The specifics lead us into the depths. That's pretty powerful. So to be open to the specifics and maybe writing about it, inquiring about it. And Angelica, I'm really curious, if you don't mind me asking you on a personal level.
Sure.
Your bio talks about many near-death experiences.
Mm-hmm.
What happened for you that caused many near-death experiences?
They were very different. I mean, I had a pretty bad injury when I was a kid, a very big trauma, and I went into shock. I had my foot run over by a lawnmower, actually. So my foot was cut open in 3 places, so I was bleeding to death, basically. And so I went into shock. I was very young, and my teeth were chattering. And if you've ever been anesthetized when you're in shock, you know, I was right on the edge of that experience. So, you know, to relive that out of your body, actually at the time, of course, that's traumatizing. But then also, you know, anesthesia can stays in the system, especially if it is accompanied by states that are outside of the window of tolerance, traumatic experiences, dissociative experiences, freeze, and the like of when we come outside of our window of tolerance. So I had to go back through a lot of those experiences. They weren't exactly some of what we hear as very pleasant experiences of seeing the light and, you know, angels. And while I've had experiences like that, they weren't related to death experiences. So I had a lot of out-of-body, leaving-my-body, near-death experiences.
Interesting. And is that when your gifting started, or was it separate from that?
No, it was, you know, I think, you know, I always think that trauma is a gift. I mean, from having had a lot of trauma experiences, but I didn't know that at the time, and I certainly wasn't looking for it. I really just wanted to get out of anxiety and not be suffering. I think it was a gift, and it is a gift to know that you're suffering, because who is it that's doing the knowing? Someone in there is observing that we're suffering, and that is a powerful, powerful starting point. The challenge is if we don't have enough self-compassion, or we don't know how to nourish or nurture ourselves, then we really suffer, because having a lot of self-awareness or awareness and not a lot of compassion really creates an experience of like a hell in life. And so for me, I feel that the gifting really came just from the dedication and the commitment to a level of gentleness and tenderness and kindness and presence with each moment of my fear. And I had a lot of trauma, so it created a lot more presence than I probably ever could have imagined. You know, all of that defense and all of that trauma becomes food for the soul. It becomes a metabolic process from which you unfold and become more and more present and deeper with the truth of who we are. So I see all of that as a gifting, and it would be marvelous if all of us had more access to just learning how to be in our bodies and regulate, so we had that empowerment vehicle of awareness.
Well, that's very inspiring. And I would like to ask on behalf of everybody listening who is at some level or some great level suffering right now. You mentioned the qualities of self-compassion and gentleness and kindness. How can they get on the healing journey to get out of suffering and take a journey like yourself so that they can be on the other side in a really good whole place? What kind of practices or beingnesses can we employ?
Well, I always feel that, you know, there are a lot of really great mindfulness classes, and slowing down embodiment meditations. I teach embodiment meditations, learning how to regulate your nervous system. Mindfulness classes teach a portion of that, but they don't really necessarily get into how the nervous system works. So I obviously teach classes about that. The first module of my online class is about embodying self-compassion. And you know, while I'm saying that about my work, there are absolutely other ways that you can learn this. There are self-compassion classes, but it really is a body-oriented, intimate place where we begin to sense at a very neutral level what is occurring for us, just observing. So mindfulness practices, working with a good somatic therapist in person or online, I mean, both really work. And that's really the place that we need to start, is with ourselves and sensing ourselves. That's not always that easy when we have a very traumatic early life. It takes attention and a facilitator sometimes to help us feel that we can stitch back together a relationship to ourselves, because of whatever historical context we came from where we weren't able to stay with ourselves. You know, we had to leave ourselves to get the love or the nurturing we needed from our parents or from our caregivers.
It's interesting. You talked about one of the things that could be helpful is slowing down. And mm-hmm. I know that that is what I'm called to right now, which is completely antithetical to everything mm-hmm. I've ever done. And even though, in theory, in my mind, I completely understand, and I see the validity, for me to, I get into a place of, okay, I shouldn't be doing anything. And then all I can think of is, well, how can I fill that time? You know, do I sit here? Do I journal? Do I watch TV? Do I play with the puppy? It's still, I want to, my being wants to go to activity. What does that even look like? Do not be busy. And I mean that in earnest. What does that feel like or look like to just be?
Absolutely. And when we have strategies of survival that are so habituated, that have chemical reactions that are somewhat addictive to our system, it's very challenging to see the value of actually slowing it down. So that's why it's good to either enroll in a course or work with somebody or set yourself up with your own meditation discipline, you know, for 40 days that you do an embodiment meditation or a self-regulating meditation and track one's progress. So I give people an intention workbook. I give them journaling exercises and meditation. So it's something that you can self-design or you can sign up for something, and that self-reflective process starts to give us a different anchor inside, as opposed to just pursuing what the neural pathways and the strategies tell us to pursue, like you're saying. You know, it's not that easy to give up strategies that seemed to have worked in the past, at least at one level.
Yes, absolutely. And it feels to me like falling into a void of nothing on so many levels. Mm-hmm. And the activity translates in me to creating something. This is creation. This is manifestation.
Mm-hmm.
And although I know in my heart or my soul that really a being can create just as easily, or we can receive information that way or guidance.
Yeah, and we're much more capable than our patterns would let us have. You know, we have a lot more potential, a lot more capacity, but it's like anything. I mean, you can't get a strong muscle by staring at a weight. You actually have to create resistance in the body to build muscle, and it's the same with being present and being mindful and slowing down and having self-compassion. One has to create some drag or get some traction in some form of a discipline or a study or a commitment, you know, to some version of a container that helps us explore those qualities.
Love it. And you mentioned that you're about to do an online class. Where do people go for that?
They can go to the website right now. It's not up yet, but it'll start in January. But there are certainly resources. All the resources on my website are free. So there's talks. There are also meditations and some blog entries, so we start to get into the subject matters. But I always feel that the first place to start is embodying self-compassion, because there has to be enough of a witness present to move through traumatic experiences. And the body is really a beautifully intelligent, holistic vehicle that is not going to erupt in too much necessarily if it's given the opportunity to move at a slow pace. It'll only come up with what needs to be resolved. It's not going to erupt unnecessarily if we're just slowing down and present with ourselves.
That's lovely. I like that. So whatever comes up, it's really coming up and becoming present in our awareness to be healed. And it's not like we have a barrage or buffet table full of stuff screaming at our attention, but the right thing actually comes up at the right time.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes when people have, I wouldn't say that that's always true, because obviously if somebody has PTSD or they have a tremendous amount of trauma, that's really someone that needs to be working with a practitioner to help them regulate and discharge and complete some of the trauma, for sure. But to have somebody be the witness until we develop our own witness in those states, that's the value of working with a practitioner.
Be the witness, or in some of the cases that Angelica is talking about, it's good to have a really good somatic therapist such as she to work with to help you through these situations. We are going to take a break, and you can join me on Twitter. It's my name, Debbie Dashinger, D-A-C-H-I-N-G-E-R. When we come back, I'm going to be speaking with Angelica about what is a double bind or attention field, and a little bit more about guilt and shame. Of course, you can call in if you've got a question for her. Stay right there, and we will be back very soon. Welcome back to Dare to Dream. This is Debbie Dashinger. I'm in conversation with Angelica Singh. And Angelica, double bind or attention field, what is that?
Okay, so let's start with attention field. So attention field would be, this is one of the easiest examples I have. Imagine you're a mom with a baby on a flight that's crying incessantly, and you've got 200 people staring at you, giving you the evil eye, and you can feel their disgruntled anger, upset, annoyance, and you have a child that's hungry that needs to be soothed. That's attention field. You're the mother. You're experiencing this wave of irritation from passengers. Your baby's crying and needs support. You have mixed feelings about how to make everybody happy.
Mm-hmm.
So
I can relate to that, sort of like if my puppy starts, she never barks. But the rare time she will, it's like, oh, shut up, please. I don't want other people to be looking or judging or anything like that.
Right, right. So anytime attention field arises, it's just a level of tension inside of you where there are two things going on at the same time that create tension. So we experience tension fields all the time, and the whole process of getting more present and creating more resiliency, even what we began talking about, which is inner authority, is the neutrality to be able to sit with all of it. So if you as the owner of your dog lets other people have their experience, maybe there are people who are going to judge or project, and you're with yourself and you're with your animal, and so you might experience the tension but not necessarily the, oh, my God, I feel so insecure and bad now, they're unhappy, I'm unhappy, my dog needs to be quiet. All of the negative kind of criticism that goes on inside of us when we identify with one side. So sitting with tension fields is really a resiliency-building exercise, meaning that we can handle the tension.
Handle the tension. And a double bind, what is that?
A double bind is an experience that, from being in the workshop, that's really an experience where no choice is a good choice. Very similar to a book having binds on both sides. You really don't feel that you can get out. And when there is a double bind in our early life, this is a setup for not feeling possibilities, not feeling that we can create possibilities. So perhaps our mother, when we were born, our mother was very unwell, and when we were coming out of the womb, she was very unwell or somehow experienced some kind of illness. So we might need attention, but she needs attention, and we need her to love us and give us nurturing, so we begin to love her earlier on than we would have wanted as for a child. So that's a double bind. We need love, but we have to give it to get it, and therefore we have to abandon ourselves. So we're not caught. We're caught between not getting what we want on either side. If we stay with ourselves, our mother won't love us. If we give to her, we have to abandon ourselves.
Mm. I just know people related to that. I just know people did.
Yeah.
That was big. Yeah. And regarding guilt and shame, is addiction created from guilt and shame? Actually, as I say that, I'm almost seeing that. I'm wondering, is it born out of guilt and shame, and then does addiction, like cyclical, then create more guilt and shame?
My personal belief and feeling on addiction is that addiction is always about a loss of connection. Guilt and shame are symptoms of addiction. They're not in and of themselves the reasons we become addicted. Separation and lack of connection or loss of connection is really the source of addiction for everybody. It doesn't matter what the addiction is.
Mm.
Does that make sense to you?
Really does. Yep. Very much so. Powerful, too. And what do you want to say here at the end about inner authority? What haven't we talked about that you'd like to share?
Well, part of establishing a relationship to yourself and having inner authority has to do with coming back into a relationship with the health and the blueprint of who we are, meaning unencumbered by ideas or thoughts and of what we're not or what we should be. So most people that carry guilt or shame use guilt and shame as governors for their behavior and their thoughts and their actions instead of just allowing themselves to unfold. It's a very normal experience, even though it's a very painful experience. So part of coming into inner authority is to recognize that we all need space to learn and grow and unfold and foible and step into ourselves from a place of knowing that we all have ignorance. We all don't know what's going to happen as we go forward. So working on being more present and slowing down, embodying deeper levels of self-compassion, feed the ability to have inner authority so that guilt and shame can then be metabolized and no longer be the authority of how we control our behavior, that we have a strong enough connection to our moral compass, which allows us to be the authority of, in our own lives, that we can have, as we spoke with Eileen earlier, our core values intact, our integrity intact, and we don't have to compromise who we are. We begin to move away from the emotional realm then. We move into a much more benevolent, cooperative, and inner leadership experience. That's real empowerment, where we're not afraid of having to subject ourselves to relationships and being out of integrity because of old patterns of feeling shameful or guilty about our own needs or about what we perceive is our core values, what our core values are, that we can stay with that commitment because of who we've become instead of going back to the past.
Wow. So hearkening also back to what you said, courage to know that the universe is going to meet us and Source has our back. They will back us up. Powerful stuff, Angelica. Thank you for coming on Dare to Dream again.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And if you want to find her, go to AngelicaSingh, SINGH.com, and you'll also find free meditations and talks there. And I end today's show with this quote from Amma. Life is filled with God's light, but only through optimism will you experience that light. May divine grace always be upon you.